All right, so we're holding on test on the days 10 lines from the bottom. Okay, well, okay, so we're holding 10 lines from the bottom on test on the days. Line begins Lo Yitzri. All right, so our Mishnah had talked about the, our Perek is talking about Pidyon Petach Hamor. Our Mishnah had mentioned various cases where you have a suffix, which animal is the Bechor and which one is not, and or whether there's one or two, et cetera. And we have cases where even though there's a suffix on it, you still have to set aside a, you have to set aside a sheep in case there's a Bechor.
There's three cases.
We had altogether 9 cases in Mishnah. But we said the Mishnah talks about certain cases where there's a suffix, which animal is the Bechor, or whether there is even a Bechor at all. Because, for example, you have a case where the mother donkey gave birth to twins, a male and a female, and you're not sure which one came out first. So nevertheless, the Mishnah says you still have to set aside a sheep as the pidyon. You don't have to give it to the Kohen, because I'm Moitzim Mechaber Levanaya, but you have to designate. So we were discussing the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon on that subject. Rabbi Yehuda, who says that until the donkey is redeemed, it's also Bahanah. So yes, according to him, you would need to set aside a sheep. Otherwise, the donkey is going to remain also Bahanah. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, you might not even need to do that because the donkey would be Mutar Bahanah even before you redeem it. There is the din, Torah says that if you don't redeem it, then you have to break its neck. But Rabbi Shimon would say that until the time comes for redeeming it, then you're allowed to have enough.
Set aside
a main one. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is our Mishnah, you would say you set aside the sheep to designate it. If this donkey needs to be redeemed, then here's the sheep for it. But then you're allowed to keep the sheep for yourself because the Kohen can't prove that he's entitled to it.
So you have to bring the Kohen.
No, so you don't necessarily have to have the Kohen there. Again, you designate the sheep. And that's it. You say, I'm designating this sheep as the redemption for this donkey, and then you keep the sheep yourself. As opposed to a coin to Rabbi Shimon, apparently you wouldn't even need that. So we were discussing the opinions back and forth of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We said one reason why Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's also b'hana before you purge it. One reason we said is because we see the Torah insists that you redeem it with a particular something, namely a seth. And therefore, we said, therefore, that's a reason, and it's similar to Maisa Sheni in that sense, that therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to use it freely before the pinion, as opposed to, according to Rav Shimon, would say, the fact is, the sheep itself is mutter, the sheep itself has no dinim of kedusha at all, once you do give it to the Kohen, or in this case, you don't have to give it to the Kohen or whatever, so therefore, he would argue that the donkey itself shouldn't be also beforehand either. Pinion, in other words, normally, when you're poida, want an object for money or whatever, what happens is the Kedusha goes off the object and onto the money or whatever you're parting with. Here you have the donkey is now Mutar B'Hanah completely. It's like any other donkey, and the sheep is also completely Mutar B'Hanah. There's no particular dealing with it. So therefore, Rav Shimon argues that shows there was never any Isser Hanah on the donkey in the first place. Otherwise, there would be some residual Isser that would remain on the sheep, and there isn't.
As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda.
As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the fact that Torah insists that you use a sheep for the redemption, if you're going to be redeeming at below its market value, implies that it's like Maaser Sheni, just like Maaser Sheni, the Torah requires you to redeem it with coined money, and then the money gets and before you redeem Maaser Sheni, it's also Bahana. Fine, you said you can be Makadish a woman with it, but because she knows that she doesn't take it to Yerushalayim, et cetera, fine, but yeah. So that was all. Yeah.
What do you do?
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, until you designate it, but then that's it. You can keep it. No, so that's it. According to Rabbi Yehuda, with the Petach Hamor, you designate the sheep. In this case, where it's a suffix Petach Hamor, a suffix Bechor, you designate the sheep. You don't have to give it to the Kohen. That's it. You can keep the donkey. You can do whatever you want with it. The sheep also. The sheep.
What's the redemption?
The redemption is that you have a sheep to substitute for the donkey. And if the Kohen can ever prove that this donkey is in fact the firstborn, then he's entitled to the sheep. So that was one reason we said why for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon's argument. The other reason we said is because you have a pasuk that says loisavad b'chor sherecha v'loisavad b'chor tzeinecha, that you're not allowed to work with the firstborn of your ox, and you're not allowed to shear the firstborn of your sheep. So Rabbi Yehuda, at the end we said that we went through this and we said that what it is actually Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon both agree that the word shorcha teaches us that it only applies to animals, it doesn't apply to human beings. So a human b'chor, you are allowed to have anah from his work even before he or from whatever of him before you pray to him. A human being. We learn that from the word shorcha. Shorcha implying but not a person. What do we learn from the word tzoncha? That's where we have the argument. Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that if you're partnered with a goy in a bechor, you're still chayev in bechorah, he says, therefore, that the pasuk is telling us that you still, if you have a bechor sheep where you're a partner with a goy in it, you're allowed to shear it, you're allowed to work with it. You'd have to give half the value of it to the koyin. As opposed to according to Rav Shimon, he holds anyway that if you were partnered with a goy, the animal is completely parted from bechorah. So he takes the word seinecha and says that it means that only a bechor of sheep is also the giz of avodah. But a bechor of a donkey would be mutter because of avodah before you partner.
It's
not fine, exactly. Okay. That's where we're holding. So the shleim of Rabbi Yehuda, so I can understand according to Rabbi Yehuda, heiner dechtiv soincha, so I can understand why the pasuk has to mention the word soincha, your sheep, implying that even if you only have part ownership of that sheep, you still have, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say that the pasuk is telling us soincha, if the sheep completely belongs to you, you're not allowed to shear it, as opposed to if it half belongs to you and half to a goy, you'd be allowed to shear it. Therefore, because it's not completely soincha. So he would say that's why it has to say soincha. The shorcha after soincha. Why does it say shorcha in the first half of the pasuk? If we're only saying, because the mamayah submitted a human being, okay, once it mentions soincha in the second half of the pasuk, when it says shorcha for parallelism in the first half.
No,
in other words, you're not specifically learning anything from the langacha, from the possessive of shorcha. According to Rav Shimon, why does it have to have a possessive on either one? Rav Shimon is saying from one of them you're learning to be mamaya as a human, from the other one you're learning to be mamaya a petrachamur, so why do you need the possessive at all? Kasha. Okay, a kasha and Rav Shimon. Okay. Fine. Now we're going to begin a long...
Sure.
It should have said sure and fine. Yeah, lo yisavah before sure, lo yisavah before sure. Right. So kasha, why is it that way? Okay. Amar Rabba. So now we're going to begin a long discussion about what now. So far we're talking about the din of what's with the donkey before you redeemed it. Now we know the Torah tells us Petach Hamor Tifteh Baseh V'im Lois Tifteh Va'arach. So if you don't redeem it, then you have to break its neck. So the question is, what happens? Suppose you didn't redeem the donkey. Suppose you did end up breaking the neck. What is the din? Is that animal is the carcass of that animal Mutar B'Hanah? So, Omer Rabba, who murdered Rav Shimon, la'achar arifa shehu aser. Rav Shimon would agree that after the animal was decapitated, that then the carcass of it would be aser b'hanah. So he would say it's mutar b'hanah before you redeemed it. Then if you redeemed it, obviously it's definitely mutar b'hanah. Everybody agrees to that.
Yeah,
so right. So in other words, what we're saying is, when you consider the three stages, before you were poder, that's where Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon are arguing. After you were poded, they both agreed as mutar b'hanah. If you weren't poded and instead you broke the neck, that is where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would also both agree as mutar b'hanah. Says Rabbi.
This is all according to Rabbi.
We're going to be now discussing at great length this opinion of Rabbi's, right? My timer. Now, why would that be? Because Rabbi Shimon would say goma arifa arifa me egla arufa. Because he says we learn a zera shava from the word arifa from the root about decapitating va'arafta and va'orfusham by an egla arufa. Now the egla arufa is also b'hanah after it's decapitated, and as we'll discuss soon, Rashi brings from the Gemara in Kiddushin that says that actually even that you have an opinion. There's an opinion in it a few places in the Gemara that once it's brought to the Nachal Eisan, already it becomes also b'hanah. But at any rate, after it's decapitated, it's definitely also b'hanah, no question about it. So therefore, sort of Shimon is learning a gzeira shava from that. So Amar Rava, or Rava really, it's supposed to be. Rava, Rava, whatever. Mina Amin Allah, where am I getting that from? Where am I getting this, that Rav Shimon would agree to that? The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Ha'orla, the Kilaya Kerem, the Shur Amniskol, the Shur that killed somebody and therefore would have to be stoned by Beis Din. Now here we're talking about, let's say, we're going to be talking about whether each of these things has Tumas Osin. Now, in the case of the Shur HaNiskol, if it was stoned, Rashi points out, obviously it's going to be a nevela. It's not relevant to talk about Tumas Oslin. It has Tumas nevela anyway. The Nafka Minna would be, first, so Rashi points out two possibilities. One is, let's say, for example, you shechted it after Gmar Din. We've learned a number of times that once the Shur HaNiskol, once Nigmar Din, once Beis Din has given the verdict that this shur has to be stoned, at that point it becomes also b'hanah, and even if you were to shecht it, the meat of it would be also to eat, it would be also b'hanah. So this is the case we're talking about. The Eglah Arufa. The Eglah Arufa, again, what Rashi says, we're talking about, given that once you bring it to the Nachal Eisan, it becomes Osir Bahana, according to one opinion, which is actually the Alofa, then at that point, even if you were to shecht it, rather than decapitating it, it would be Osir Bahana.
For sure is Osir Bahana. The Eglah Arufa.
The Eglah Arufa is Osir Bahana. And also we started with Orla and Kalai Keren. This is Poda Mitzora, also the birds that are used for the purification ritual for the first stage of the Tara of a Mitzora, or Petachamur, this is what we're talking about over here. You have at the beginning of Parshas Mitzora, where it describes that they take two birds and spring water and a piece of cedar wood and a piece of azo, and they shech the one bird over the water and dip all the other things into the mixture of water and blood and sprinkle it on the Mitzora, and then the other bird is sent away. So the one that's shechted is definitely also Bana. And you have an opinion elsewhere in the Gemara, Rish Lakish, I think it is, says that even the one that's not shechted, even the one that eventually is sent away, it's also Bana until it's actually sent away. Anyway, so here we'd be talking about, let's say, the shechted one, or the other one, if you were shechted it before you sent it away, whatever. Petachamur, Rashi says two possibilities of Petachamur. One is, let's say, you shechted it, and it's still convulsing around, so it doesn't yet have Tumas Nevela, but it could still, but the fact that you shechted it, now remember, it's a donkey, shechted is not really relevant here, but we learned in Cholin, we learned at the beginning of Perika over Horoite, the whole Perika we had over there about Tumas Eichlin, which, by the way, we're going to have more discussion of Tumas Eichlin here, that the very fact that a Yid shechted it means that he had a certain machshava that he wants to consider it food, therefore it's able to have Tumas Eichlin, as opposed to otherwise, while
his
machshava is enough, yeah. Because he's the one shechted. Yeah. So that's what we learned about that there. So one possibility, Rashi says, is if it had been decapitated, there'd be nothing to talk about, because then nobody had in mind to make it Oakland. And as long as it's convulsing, a goy is also to eat from it anyway. A yid is always also to eat from it. That's one possibility. The other possibility, Rashi says, is we could be talking about even when it was decapitated. So in that case, you could ask with the nevela, so what's the difference? The difference would be, Rashi says, let's say you have less than a kazayas of it, which doesn't have too much nevela, because you need a kazayas for that. You mix it together with other food, so now you have a total of a kabesa, part of which is made up, less than a kazayas is made up from the nevela of this donkey, and the rest is made from other food. Does it combine together for tumas eichlin? You would have had to have in mind. So the question is, does it have tumas eichlin or not? Okay. So that's petachamur.
Part of the
kabesa of food consists of less than a kazayas from the petachamur, and the rest of it consists of other food, making up a kabesa altogether. Right. So the combination is a kabesa. It's able to be matam there. Right. Okay. So that's petachamur. Or basa b'cholav, and the last one on the list is basa b'cholav. Kulan matamin tumas eichlin. All of them are able to contract tumas eichlin if a source of tumah touches them. The point is, in other words, all of them are also in and of themselves. And some of them even, all of them are also on their own. But the nafkamina is, in other words, that if then those things touch other food, they will be metame then. So there can be a go between. If you have a shed that touches them and they touch other food, then the other food will become tame. Reb Shimon and Makolor ain't metame tumas eichlin. Reb Shimon says, I disagree. None of these things on these lists are metame tumas eichlin, with the exception of one. Or merger Reb Shimon, but Basa Bacholov shematame tumas eichlin. Reb Shimon would agree regarding Basa Bacholov that it does have tumas eichlin, because it had a period of time when it was kosher to eat. Namely, Rashi says before it was cooked. We learned this in Cholin as well. We had that explanation, and there was another explanation as well. One, the explanation that Rashi is using over here is that even if you soak basa b'cholav together all day, that doesn't become osur b'daraisa. B'daraisa, they only become osur b'hanah and b'achila and whatever when you cook them together. So therefore, you can have basa b'cholav soaking together for all, and they still remain mutter. So they're mixed together already, but they still are mutter to eat. Only when they're cooked do they become osur. So therefore, it's called shaka kosher. In other places, Rashi explains differently with the Wilhelm Cholin, a different explanation that the vote was that Boser by itself is mutter and Cholav by itself is mutter. It's only the combination that's also.
Regardless of whether it's Kishu or not.
Right. Well, no, it's only also mutter, right, if it's cooked. But in other words, the point is, as opposed to all these other things, Orla was also as soon as it started growing. Kalaya Kerem, same thing. The Sherem Niskel and the Eglon Rufa are also still while they're alive. And at that point, they're also because they're Avram and Achai, even a Goy is not allowed to eat them. And the Sukkot and Matzora, same thing. They were alive. So none of them had a shakla kosher. Only Bosa B'cholov had a period when it was mutter to eat. So therefore, Reb Shimon would agree that that has Tumas Ochon, but he disagrees on all the other ones. The Omer of Asi, Omer of Yechanan, my time is Reb Shimon. So Reb Asi tells us in the name of Reb Yechanan, why does Reb Shimon hold that Bosa B'cholov is different? Why does he hold all these other ones which don't have a shakla kosher on do not have Tumas Ochon, and only this one does? Because the Pasuk says, what kind of food is able to have Tumas Ochon? Any food which can be eaten. From which we learn, Reb Shimon says, "Oichol shatad yochol la'achil la'acherim kori." We learn this in Kolin as well. Only food that you are allowed to feed to acherim, meaning to goyim, meaning that's not also b'hana kori oichol. Only such thing is called food. So, for example, let's say treifa meat or nevela meat or whatever, it's mutar b'hana. So you're allowed to feed it to a goy. Therefore, it can have tumas oichol. But all these other things, orla kolay acherim, etc., they will also b'hana. As opposed to Bosa B'cholov, again, since it had a shakla kosher as well. So that's first, before we get to the proof of what Reb Shimon holds about the Petra Chamur after it was decapitated, which is why we're bringing this in, first we have to explain, if Reb Shimon is saying that the difference is whether the food is mutar b'hana or not, Bosa B'cholov, then you have to ask, as far as Bosa B'cholov, my iria d'hoisel shakla kosher, why is Reb Shimon bothering to mention the point, that Bosa B'cholov had a shakla kosher. Let's say we would say that Bosa B'cholov was hypothetically all like all the other ones. There was never a time when it was mutter. What's the difference? Typically, we have a different reason that Reb Shimon should be saying that it's not part of this rule.
Why do we say that there was no shakla kosher?
We're saying there was a shakla kosher, but who cares whether there was a shakla kosher? There's a different reason. Typically, I have another reason why Reb Shimon should say that Bosa B'cholov can have Tumas Oichon. Because the Oichol Shata Yochol La'achil La'achirim Hu. Because according to Reb Shimon, Bosa B'cholov is something that you're allowed to feed to a goy, because according to him, it's something that's mutter b'hana. We learned this in Cholin as well. The Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Meshum Reb Shimon, Bosa B'cholov also ba'achilo mutter b'hana. He says Bosa B'cholov is also to eat, but it is mutter b'hana. Of course, all the other Chachamim disagree with him, and the Halacha is not like him. But still, according to his own opinion, Bosa B'cholov is mutter b'hana. Shenemar, because he says, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to eat Bosa B'cholov ki am kodesh atal Hashem alekecha, because you're a holy nation to Hashem. Then you have a different pasuk about treifa that says you should be holy people to me and don't eat meat that's treifa, that from an animal that was injured. So therefore, so we make a shava. Just like treifa meat from an animal that was injured is also to eat, but it's mutar b'hana, and everybody agrees to that. There's no reason it should be also b'hana. Ach kan also b'achilo mutar b'hana. So the same way he says basa b'cholav is the same thing. So the question is, so again, before we get back to explaining Reb Shimon's opinion about the Petra Chamur that was decapitated, we have to anyway figure out, why is this Braisa telling us that Reb Shimon would make an exception for Bosa B'cholov because it had a Shata Kosher, because it had a period of time when as Bosa B'cholov it was mutter, namely, like Rashi says over here, when it was, before it was cooked. As opposed to all the other ones, never had a shakla kosher. Anyway, Reb Shimon holds Bosa B'cholov as mutter. So even if it was cooked together, and even let's say it never had a shakla kosher, then it would still be...
It's
completely irrelevant, exactly, shakla kosher. The relevant question is whether it's mutter b'hana. According to Reb Yochanan's explanation, that the reason is that depends on whether you're allowed to feed it to a goy or not. The answer is, chodah v'oid karma. The answer is, you're right, Reb Shimon, the Braita is actually telling us this and another reason. Number one, Bosa B'cholov is something that Reb Shimon says that I hold anyway, even as Bosa B'cholov, you're allowed to feed it to a goy anyway because it's not also b'hana. And second of all, forget about even as far as the fact that you're allowed to feed it to a goy, even via the Jew himself. There was a period when this Bosa B'cholov was mutter to eat, namely before it was cooked. In other words, you're right. Reb Shimon is not giving the reason that they had a shakla kosher as the primary reason. He's giving it as a reason. There are two reasons. Number one, that it's mutar b'hana in the sense that you're allowed to give Bosa B'cholov to a goy, according to him. And number two, that even you, a Jew, would have been able to eat it before it was cooked together. Anyway.
So the issur of Bosa B'cholov to some is...
According to everybody else, is also b'hana. They would agree it has a shakla kosher, but they would hold also b'hana, whereas Reb Shimon would hold mutar b'hana. Okay. So the point is that fine. Once we settle that 5 points, and now we understand why Reb Shimon makes an exception for Basa B'cholov as opposed to anything else. So now that we've established that, the im is the delight.
What's the answer to the question why in any case he says there was no...
That's why, because he says there's two reasons. We're saying, number one, there's a reason via goy, that's it's mutter b'hanav, that therefore you or Jew are allowed to sell it or give it or whatever to a goy. And number two, the fact that it has a shas kosher even for you as a Jew.
What's the relevance?
The relevance is that even if you don't accept the drasha, even if you were going to insist that to be considered oichol as far as tumas oichol, you yourself have to eat it. Fine, there was a period of time when you could eat it, as opposed to all the other ones. Again, orla, kalaya, kerem, shara, nistol, none of them had a shas kosher. Now, Now, if you were going to tell me that Reb Shimon were to say, now remember, Reb Shimon had said before you redeem the donkey, it's mutter b'hanah. Now we're talking about after you didn't end up redeeming it, instead you had to break its neck, as the Torah tells us. We're trying to figure out, Rabba had told us that Reb Shimon would say it's also b'hanah. So now here's the proof. Because if Reb Shimon were to say that it's mutter b'hanah, listen, you murdered Reb Shimon with Patrick Hamara, boss of b'chol of Shimon Tam and Tumas Eichlin. Then Reb Shimon should have to say there's an exception as far as the Petach Hamor as well. He should put it in the same category as Basa B'cholov, because like Basa B'cholov, it is Mutar B'hanah according to him. We know that he holds Basa B'cholov as Mutar B'hanah. If he held that Egla Arufa is also Mutar B'hanah, then it would be Oichol Shata Yochol Achir L'Achirim. It would be food that you're able to feed to somebody else, to a guy. And therefore, it should follow the same rule. He said, Reb Yochanan explained that Reb Shimon's primary reason for saying whether some primary criterion for saying whether something has tumas oichlin or not is not so much whether it had a shata kosher, that's sort of a side issue, but the main reason has to do with whether it was mutter b'hanah. Well, if Reb Shimon held that a petach hamer after it's decapitated is mutter b'hanah, then he would have had to say that's in the same category as basa b'cholov. It can have tumas oichlin. Again, the two scenarios that Rashi describes, either where you shechted it rather than decapitating it, where then you're shechting it and your machshava gives it the status of oichol, or we're talking about after it's decapitated, but we're talking about you have less than a kezayis of it, so it doesn't have too much tumela. So in those two situations, Reb Shimon should have said that it has too much oichol, and he doesn't. So therefore, that demonstrates that he does hold that the petach hamer after it's decapitated is also b'hanah. So therefore, it is like all the other things in the list that had no shasa kosher. There wasn't a time when you could say that it would have been mutter to eat. Because when it was alive, even a goy wouldn't have been allowed to eat it, even a chai. And now that it's dead, now that it's decapitated, it's also b'hanah. So there you go. There's the proof. However, the Gemara says that's not necessarily a solid proof, because if you actually had in mind that somebody was going to be eating this dead donkey, then you're right. Maybe Reb Shimon would say it has too much oichlin. Normally, people don't eat donkeys. Even goyim, who are allowed to eat non-kosher animals, they generally don't eat donkeys because they're disgusting. The flesh of them, and of other work animals like horses or whatever is disgusting, and most goyim don't eat it. That's what we said the other day, for example, about the afterbirth of it, the amniotic sac, we said it's considered particularly disgusting, and it's considered pure shabalma. So yeah. So hochab mayaskin and deloy choshevalay. So here, the braisa could just be talking about a case, the normal situation, you didn't have in mind anybody's going to eat it, because normally nobody eats donkey meat. So therefore, so in that case, you're right, it doesn't have too much oichlin. Not because Reb Shimon might after all hold it is mutter b'hanah. Conceivably, you could feed it to a goy, but where are you going to find a goy who's going to want to eat it? So therefore, practically,
you have to have machshava and
without. In other words, what it is like this. We learned in Cholin, you have things that by default are considered food. Normal things that people normally eat are considered food regardless what machshava you had. You have a loaf of bread in front of you, egg, meat, fish, whatever, yeah. Usually they don't need machshava. But you have certain borderline cases, things that normally people don't eat. And therefore, if you want them to have tumas oichlin, you would have to actually have in mind that they're going to be used as food. So the donkey, in this case, might be a situation like that. So why doesn't it have tumas oichlin? Not because Reb Shimon would say it's also b'hanah, maybe he holds mutter b'hanah, but because most people don't eat it. So unless you specifically had a machshava in mind to make it food, then it's not food.
In order to have too much oichlin, you have to have two conditions, machshava and...
No, you, again, for most things you don't need machshava. For most things you don't need machshava because automatically they're food. Most things for them to have tumas earthen, all you need is one thing. They have to be mukshal lekabel tuma. They have to be wedded with one of the seven liquids. But you have certain kinds of things where, in addition, you need makshava, because without that, they're not normally considered food. We had examples of them in Cholin as well. We had, for example, the skins of animals, for example, are not normally eaten, except we said there were certain soft skins over there. We had a number of
different things.
The relevance is that maybe Rav Shimon holds the dead donkey is mutabana. You decapitated it, you weren't poide. Nevertheless, Rav Shimon might say the same way as he holds it was mutabana before you were poide, the same way it's mutabana after you were poide. According to him, why does it not have too much oichlin? Because it's not considered oichel. Not because it's asabana. The other things in the braisa, orla, kalayakerem, etc., by default are food. You don't need machshava on them, and the reason why they don't have tumas oichlin is because they're also b'hanah according to Reb Shimon. But they're also b'hanah according to everybody. But according to Reb Shimon, that prevents them from having tumas oichlin. As opposed to, we're thinking that the reason why he would say that petach chamor doesn't have tumas oichlin is for the same reason, because also b'hanah, but maybe not. The difference is that chamor is not usually food.
Fine.
So it would have to have machshava.
Anything asabana cannot have too much food.
According to Reb Shimon, unless it had shasa kosher, right.
That's completely different from the comment.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay.
As long as you understand.
Yeah. Okay.
And why is he saying that anything that doesn't have an hour cannot have too much food?
Because we said, because you learned from the pasuk, Mikala Ochal Asher Ye'ochal, that the food has to be something that can be eaten, even that it can be eaten by somebody, even if it's by goyim. In other words, that you are allowed to feed to goyim. In other words, that's mutabana. If you give it to a goy, for example, if you have a goyish worker and you give it to him, that's enough. Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, so that explains Reb Shimon's opinion. So the point is, we haven't necessarily proved yet that Reb Shimon would say that the petach chamor is also b'ana. Maybe the only reason it doesn't have too much oichlin is because it's not usually oichlin. Okay, so first of all, let's figure out, we'll get back to Reb Shimon soon, but first of all, the time of my Matami Rabbanon. Okay, so why did the Rabbanon hold that the Petach Hamur does have Tumas Oichlin? We said in the Braisa, the Chachamim said all six things listed over there, Orla Kalai, Kerem, Shara, Nisfal, Egla, Rufa, Tzipur, Matzera, Petach Hamur, seven things actually, in Basa B'cholav, are all Matami Tumas Oichlin, and Reb Shimon disagreed on six of them. So why do the Chachamim hold that the Petach Hamor is Metame Tumas Oichlin? After all, don't they agree that's not normally eaten? The reason is, Amru Rabbanan Kameze Rav Sheshes, so the Rabbanan said in front of Rav Sheshes, the reason is, Hoyov Isurei Chishuvoi, because they say the Isur makes it important. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, the very fact that the Torah says that a Jew is not allowed to eat it, and not allowed to have anah from it implies that it is something that conceivably could be edible. So therefore, they would hold you don't need machshava for it. Okay, it's a donkey. Okay, people don't normally eat donkey flesh. But nevertheless, the very fact that the Torah makes it also for a Jew to eat gives it a certain importance, makes it, in effect, that it's potentially edible. So therefore, it would have too much oichlin, therefore.
So that contradicts Reb Shimon.
Okay, that's fine. This is the Chachamim. I just contradict Reb Shimon. They're all Tanaim like him. Okay. So the question is, do we say that? Do the Rabbanon hold of such a concept that once something is also automatically, once the Torah says that a certain thing is also to eat, automatically that gives a certain importance and makes it that it has Tumas Oichlin? V'hatnan. We learn in a Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Taharis, we discussed this in Cholin as well. There are 13 dinim that apply to the nevela of a dead kosher bird, which we learned in Zvachim and in Cholin, and then we've learned a number of times already in Sefer Kodshim, that a nivlas oif tahor is unique in that it doesn't have too much, it's not matame when you touch it, it's not matame when you carry it, but if a person swallows a kezias of it, then he and his clothes become tame. It's matame b'dei tabuya. So we're not going to list the whole 13 things. The Mishnah and Taharis lists all of them, but the Zuachas Mehen, among them are the following. Tzricha Machshava, in order for it to have Tumas Oichlin, you need to think about it. Meaning, in other words, that Rashi says, let's say a sheret touched it. If you didn't have in mind that it's going to be used as food by somebody, whether a Jew or a goy, then the sheret is not matame. the shadow is not matame. It's not considered food. You yourself don't become tame from touching it, because then you don't become tame from touching a nivos aftar. So tzricha machshava, the ainat tzricha hechsher, another din that applies to it, is it doesn't require hechsher. It doesn't require to be wetted with one of the seven liquids in order to be makabel tuma, because it has tuma chamura, because we learned in the cholin, the concept, we learned in Ha'orva Arayta, the concept that if you have something which eventually could have a tuma chamura, which is able to be metame with a strong tuma, that's metame people and kalim, then it doesn't require hechsher in order to get a tuma kala, a lesser tuma, which is tuma sarifin. The point is, in other words, that we're saying it requires machshava. So according to the now the isurei chishuv, if you're telling me this concept that when the Torah tells you something is also to eat, automatically that means that it has a certain chashivus and therefore it doesn't require you to think about it. Lomeli machshava, then why should it require machshava? According to the Chachamim, again, you understand the point. According to the Chachamim, this nivla sotar, the Torah is telling you you're not allowed to eat it because in general you're not allowed to eat nevela, you're not allowed to eat shefa, and here the Torah tells you that if you do, you're going to become tamei. So you have an Isser on it to eat it. You have an Isser, the regular Isser Nevela on it. According to the logic, Isser is Cheshuva. You should say automatically, therefore, it's considered food. So it shouldn't require Machshava. Whether you had Machshava or not, as long as a Sheretz touched it, it should have Tumas Eichlin. And the Mishnah is telling us that not.
So here you have an example.
Where Isser is not Cheshuva.
Yes, sorry, not for sure. You're not allowed to eat it.
You still require Machshava in order for it to be considered food and be able to get Tumas Eichlin. The answer is Homani Reb Shimon. Okay, we could say that Mishnah in Taurus is according to Reb Shimon. Not necessarily disagree with the Chachamim of our Braisa. The Chachamim of our Braisa might say that you're right. You only have 12 dinim that apply to that. It doesn't require much trouble. Okay. Toshma, Nivlas Behemoth Tmeya B'chomakam, another Mishnah also in Taurus says. This one actually is a Mishnah in Uktin. What?
You could give the same answer to this.
Eventually, the Gemara is going to do that. But first, we're going to see if we can prove it. Okay, so another Mishnah from Uktzin says, Livlas behemoth tmeya b'chomokim, the carcass of a behemoth tmeya, anywhere, a behemoth tmeya, a horse, a donkey, a pig, whatever, anywhere, the nivlas of tahor v'achela b'kfarim, or a dead kosher bird or chelev in villages. What's the difference between villages and larger cities? So Rashi over here mentions the fact that in villages, people are poor. They don't usually eat. They don't usually eat bird meat, and they don't usually eat fat. So in such places, it would require machshava. Otherwise, it's not considered food. Kosmith also mentions, which we learned at Cholin as well, another reason which I think Rashi said over there, which is that in large cities, you have many people, and you have many people, and there's not that much of a supply of meat, so people will eat anything, as opposed to in villages, there are fewer people, and there's more meat available per capita, so therefore people are more finicky about what they're going to eat, and they don't necessarily eat these things. Anyway, so in villages, Rashi, by the way, also goes into a long discussion over here saying that first Rashi starts by saying that when we say chelev over here, we don't mean chelev as in the kind that's osur, we mean shuman, we mean fat of animals. So when it says nivlas ochav chelev b'kfarim, we don't mean chelev, the kind which is intrinsically osur. We mean the kind. It's shuman, but it comes from a nevela tahora. It comes from a dead kosher animal. So it's also on the grounds of nevela, not on the grounds of fat. Then later on, it's shuman. Then in the next. Dibra Maschol, Rashi writes that we shouldn't keep in the word chelev here at all, because when the Mishnah goes on to say that it doesn't require hechsher, why should it not require hechsher? If we're talking about chelev of a nevela, if it doesn't have tuma chamora, because we learned that the nevela itself has tuma, but the chelev of it does not. If we're talking a shechted animal,
doesn't have any
tuma. No. Because you're also a homolach. I mean, it can have tumas eichlin, if you have in mind. But so why would the Mishnah be saying that it doesn't require hechsher? So Rashi says take out the word chelev over here, which Tosfos says, and a few other Rishonim also say, that this part where Rashi says don't put in the word chelev may be something that was added later, it may not be part of Rashi's original pirush. Because Rashi's original pirush was that we said that what they say is that Rashi himself may have changed his mind. First he thought that chelev over here means shuman, then he rethought it and said, no, chelev of pashas means chelev, but in that case, can't belong in this Mishnah. Okay, anyway, so be that as it may, these things, tzrichim machshavah, v'enim tzrichim hechsher. These things, again, the nevela of a behemoth tmeya, whether in a large city or whether in a village, the nevela of an oif tahor in a village, the chelev or shuman, as the case may be, in a village, all those things, tzrichim machshava, they have to have machshava. You have to have machshava. You have to have in mind they're going to be used for food. Because again, by default, they're not being used. It's not usual to use them for food. The enum tzrichim hechsher, but they don't require hechsher because again, each one of them has the capability of having tumah chamura. The niblos behemoth tmeya, if a person touches it or carries it, is going to become tamei. The niblos of tahar, a person is going to become tamei if he swallows it. The chelev, well, that's why Rashi takes that chelev, because on the face of the chelev doesn't have tumah chamura. If we say we're talking about shuman, then it would fit. Anyway, so again, the question is...
It's only about tumah sefi.
When you need machshava to make it considered oichel, yeah. Again, v'i'amit isurei chishuva, if you're going to say this logic that something that is also, that the Torah tells you is also to eat, automatically gives it an importance and makes it considered food, if you're going to say that, lomali machshava, then why would you require machshava? Then the niblos of tahor, or the niblos behemoth tmeya, or the chelev, all of them the Torah is telling you anyway, you're not allowed to eat. So therefore, that should give them a chshivus to make them automatically be considered food. Because the very fact that the Torah tells you don't eat them implies that normally otherwise people would be eating them.
So
again, it's a contradiction. If we say this Mishnah goes like a chachamim, then you have a contradiction. And again, the answer is homani Reb Shimon. The same answer, we can say that Mishnah in Uktin also goes according to Reb Shimon.
Yes.
No, we said already. It means the very fact that the Torah says it's also to eat gives it a certain, grants it a certain importance as potential food. Right.
And that's because, and that therefore gives it.
Therefore, that would make it. Therefore, automatically, that would make it susceptible to Tumas Oichlin. Okay, so again, the answer is Reb Shimon might be the author of that Mishnah. The Chachamim might disagree with him and say that these things don't require much other. Okay. Tashma, another Mishnah says there in Uktin, Niblos behema tahora b'chomakim, a dead kosher animal anywhere. Now, the difference is a Niblos behema tmeya is usually not something that even the goyim will eat. First of all, Rashi says it's most. It's disgusting because of the fact that it didn't even die normally. It died on its own. It wasn't killed for food or whatever. It died on its own. Second of all, Rashi says there's two things that make it unattractive to anybody to eat, even for Jews or Goyim. Number one, it wasn't shechted, and number two, the fact that it's a behemoth male. As opposed to over here, we're talking about a niblos behemoth tahora, so like so to speak, it only has one strike against it. First of all, Goyim don't mind eating it because it is, after all, a behemoth tahora. It's a kind of animal that normally is used for food. Like a sheep or a cow or what have you. Number two, even a Jew, there's only one thing preventing him from eating it, the fact that it's a nevela. So therefore, it's not, so therefore, it doesn't require machshava. So therefore, einan tzrichin machshava v'loi hechsher. I skipped a line. Nivlas b'hem atar v'chamachem. The nivlas oif atar, the nevela of a kosher bird, and chelev v'shvokim, unlike in the previous part of the Mishnah where we said in small towns, here we're talking about in marketplaces, meaning in big cities, so those things, einan tzrichin machshava v'lo hechsher. Such things don't require machshava, because by default they're assumed to be used for food. Again, the niblos behemoth tahora, because a goy won't mind eating it, and even a Jew, there's only one strike against him eating it, so he's more likely to, that he's going to ignore that and eat it, as opposed to with the niblos behemoth tmeya, where you'd have to overcome two things against it. No, the point is that it doesn't require machshava because it's much more likely that somebody's going to eat it. First of all, you have a goy can eat it because, first of all, a goy is much more likely to eat it. True, a goy could just as well eat a nivlas behemoth tmeya, but the difference is a nivlas behemoth tmeya usually is more disgusting because most behemoth tmeyas are anyway not used for food regularly.
To a year and to a goy.
No, so in other words, there's two things Rashi says really. That when you in the first part of the Mishnah that we quoted earlier, a niblos behemoth tmeya has a few strikes against it. For a goy, it's disgusting because it's a behemoth tmeya and it wasn't even killed for food. And most behemoth tmeyas, like we said before about donkeys, are most common behemoth tmeyas anywhere, are disgusting to eat. So therefore, even a goy is not going to eat it. As far as a yid would have to be willing to be over on two averas to eat it. Number one, that it's a nevela, and number two, that it's a behemoth tmeya. So therefore, he's less likely to do it. Therefore, it requires machshava. If you want to have it, tumas erchin, you would specifically have to have in mind that somebody is going to eat it. As opposed to a niblos behemoth tahora, a goy is much more likely to eat it because after all, it is a species that normally is used for food, like cows, yes, they're more edible. Number two, even a Jew, there's only one strike against it, so he's much more likely to, there's a greater likelihood that he may ignore that and go ahead and eat it. It would be, the strike is that it's an avela, that wasn't tested. So therefore, it doesn't require machshava. It's automatically, by default, considered food, and therefore it can have tumas oichlin. Again, we don't mean, I mean, if you had a kazayis of it, it's anyway, tamat tumas nevela. So Rashi again explains, we're talking about you have less than a kazayis of it mixed with other food to make up a total of a kabeza. So that's the nivlas behemah tohara. The nivlas oichat torah v'achelav b'shvakim, or the carcass of a dead kosher bird or chelav in marketplaces, where again, like Rashi says before, they're richer people over there, so therefore they're more likely to eat bird meat, and they're more likely to eat fat. Or according to Tosfos, which is also how Rashi himself explains it elsewhere, that it means that in big cities you have less meat available per capita, so they'll eat anything, as opposed to in small towns, they're more finicky. Anyway, ein and srich and machshava. So in the big cities, those things don't require machshava. But why heksher? And they don't require heksher for the same reason as before, because tumah hamora. Implying, though, ha tmeya boya machshava. Okay, we're mentioning, though, a nivlas behemah tahora, and we're mentioning nivlas oiftar, implying that if it was the nevela of a, if it was nevela of a behemah tmeya or of an oiftame, then it would require machshava. V'chitema ha'mani Rav Shimon, he's going to answer the same thing as before. This Mishnah also goes like Rav Shimon. Can't. But the next part of the Mishnah is Rav Shimon disagreeing, so therefore the Reisha cannot be according to Rav Shimon. Jekatani Sefer, because the next part of that Mishnah continues, Rav Shimon says not only the Nevela of a Behemah Tahora doesn't require Machshava, also the carcasses of the four animals at the Torah list that only have one Simen Tahara, the camel, the arnevis, which is usually translated as a hare or a rabbit, the shofan, which is translated also as a rabbit or a hyrax or whatever, and then the chazir, also all of those, all of those don't require machshava or hechsher either, because he says that in that sense, they're like a behemoth tahara. Because they have one simen tara, therefore that, because they either, each one of them either chews a crud or has split hooves, as the case may be, therefore that's considered enough to make it like a behemoth tahara in that sense.
Before he said, he needs not sure because he's a mouse.
Okay, so before we were talking about, when we talked about behemoth tmeya, and we wanted to say that Mishnah, as a point of Shimon, that he would say that the behemoth tmeya, we're talking about as a horse, a donkey, animals that have no simen tara at all.
Right.
So those are not usually used as food, therefore it would require machshava. Here, because they're disgusting, even
right.
To go. So here we're talking about, one second. Here, when you have a gomel on neves shofan chazir, the fat, you have to distinguish between Jews and goyim. You think of chazir as not disgusting to goyim. In fact, Tosfos points out that goyim consider chazir a delicacy. Okay, but now you have goyim who eat the gomel as well. You have, for example, the Arabs are big on eating camel meat. Whatever. The point is, though, Reb Shimon would say, that, as a matter of fact, there are some of them aforeshim on the Pesukim who ask, why does the Pesuk single out these four that have only one simen tumah and say you're not allowed to eat them? We know you're not allowed to eat any animal unless it has both simon et tara. Why does the Pesuk specifically say these four? And you have some of them aforeshim on the Pesuk who mention that these four, the gomel, arnevis, etc., are more commonly eaten by goyim than the ones that have no simen tara at all. In other words, the ones that have a simen tara, cows, sheep, and goats, people eat them in all cultures. The ones that have only one simen tumah, the one simen tara, one simen tumah, fine. Those are more likely to be used as food by various goyish cultures, and therefore the Torah asks especially warn us not to eat them. The ones that have no simen tara, horses, donkeys, lions, zebras, anteaters, whatever, very few cultures around the monkeys, whatever, very few cultures around the world eat those in the first place, and therefore the Torah doesn't have to single those out. Anyway, the point is, the Hebrew was saying somewhat similar. The Shimon would say that the ones that have one simen tara, to that extent, are considered like the behemoth tahoros. We would say that, by default, they're considered food, even though, now again, a Jew is not allowed to eat them. But on the other hand, a goy is more likely to eat them than he is other creatures. And even a yid, for that matter, might take the view, okay, well, it has one simen tara, so it's, so to speak, like halfway to being kosher, so therefore he's more likely to think that he's allowed to eat it, so therefore it doesn't require machshava, says Rav Shimon. But anyway, the point is, that part of the Mishnah argues And Reb Shimon says, why is that? That I'm saying that the Gomel and Nevis, etc., don't require Machshava or Esher. Why do I say they don't require Machshava or Esher? Why are they like a Behemoth Tahoda in that regard? But Omer Reb Shimon, so the Reb Shimon says, Matam, Hoyov Yeshban, Simone Tara, because they have Simone Tara. Because they have one Simon Tara each. In other words, so Reb Shimon is arguing with that Mishnah. Because the Tanakhama doesn't mention this concept. The Tanakhama distinguishes strictly between Behemoth Tahora and Behemoth Tmeya. The Tanakhama doesn't know of any differences between different types of non-kosher animals. Reb Shimon is making that distinction. So obviously the earlier part of the Mishnah cannot be like Reb Shimon. It has to be according to the Chachamim, who disagree with Reb Shimon. And in that case, we're back to the question then. So in that case, all this time we were saying that Reb Shimon does not hold of the concept of Isurei Chishuva, that just because something is also automatically granted a certain importance as food, whereas the Chachamim do hold of that. Now, based on what we're saying, it seems it doesn't work out that way. The Mishnah is, these Mishnayos are telling us that the Chachamim will also hold that Isurei is not Chishuva, that just because something is also doesn't automatically make it food. It depends on whether people commonly eat it. So Nivlas Behemoth Tahora, people commonly eat, Goyim commonly eat, and even a Jew is more likely to slip up and eat it. Therefore, it's automatically considered food. Nivlas Behemoth Tmeya is not. So what are you...
They don't hold the Isurei Chishuvai.
So what are you telling me that Reb Shimon holds, that Reb Shimon does not hold the Isurei Chishuvai, and you're telling me that the Chachamim do, and that's how, and it seems that both of them agree that it's not, and that's, and that affects then what we're saying before. When we got into this discussion, because we're trying to figure out, would Reb Shimon say that the Petra Chamor is also Bahamnar or not? We said that Rabba had started by saying that he would agree it is also b'hana on the grounds that we see. He says that it doesn't. He says it doesn't have tumas osin, and he said why doesn't it have tumas osin because it's also b'hana. So we thought to say, okay, maybe it's mutter b'hana, and just he says because people don't normally eat it, so it's not considered food by default. But now we see that Reb Shimon. Now we see that Reb Shimon would say that you have to have machshav on it, and the Chachamim also say that you have to have machshav on it. So it doesn't work. Then why are Reb Shimon and the Chachamim arguing? So therefore that would bring us back to our original point. That would bring us back. Then the only reason for Reb Shimon and the Chachamim to be arguing about the Petra Chamor, whether it has Tumas Erchin, the only reason could be because Reb Shimon holds it's Mutar B'Hana, and because Reb Shimon holds that it's Mutar B'Hana and the Chamor is also B'Hana.
Because if it was
a matter that they both agree, it's also behind. Rabbah had said that Reb Shimon says it's also behind. Why? Because it doesn't have Tumas Ochlin. So why is he arguing with the Chachamim? We ended up saying because he would hold it has to have Machshava, and the Chachamim would hold it doesn't have to have Machshava. But we see now that that's not the case. We see Reb Shimon and the Chachamim both agree that whether it requires Machshava or not depends on whether it's normally used for food or not. A petra chamor is not normally used for food, therefore it would require machshava. So therefore, what reason could there be for Reb Shimon to say that it has tumas osin and the Chachamim say not? It must be that Reb Shimon would hold that it is mutar b'hana. Therefore, being mutar b'hana, it can have tumas osin, So Reb Shimon would hold it is mutar b'hana, therefore it's capable of having tumas osin once you had the appropriate machshava on it. Whereas the Chacham would hold even if you had the appropriate machshava, it wouldn't matter because it's also b'hana. So in other words, the point is Reb Shimon would say it's mutar b'hana. Or no, actually what we would say is it wouldn't matter. According to the Chachamim, it could well be also b'hana, but still have tumas osin. Fine, because the Chachamim don't care whether it's also b'hana or not. According to the Chachamim, it strictly depends on whether you have machshav. According to Reb Shimon, you have the criterion where it has to be mutar b'hana. So how could it have tumas osin? According to him, because it's mutar b'hana, and then once you have machshav on it, then it has tumas osin.
It's a contradiction in Reb Shimon.
So therefore, it's not a contradiction in Reb Shimon's reason. Well, in other words, we can't accept it. It seems we can't accept Rabbah's understanding of Reb Shimon that Rabbah had said, Reb Shimon would say that also b'hana, after it's decapitated, it doesn't seem to work.
Because
Reb Shimon says that it doesn't have tumas eichlin. Reb Shimon says that Petach Hamor does not have tumas eichlin, which we said implies that he holds also b'hana. We can't say that we can't say, as we thought to say, that it's a matter of that it depends on whether he has machshava or not, because we're saying that he and the chachamim don't actually disagree on that point, whether it requires machshava. They both hold it requires machshava. They both hold it requires machshava. So if they both hold it requires machshava, and they both held it's also b'hano, then there wouldn't be any reason for them to argue about whether it has tumas or not.
Except if you said in machlokes, on another point.
Well, that's so far though. We've contradicted Rabba's point. Because Rabba had explained the machlokas as being based on whether it's also b'hano, or that not being based on, Rabba had explained the point as that Rav Shimon says it's also b'hano, therefore according to him it's not metamet chumas ochlin. The chachamim don't care about that because they say even if it's also b'hano, it's metamet chumas ochlin. But we said that depends on the point that we said, on the other hand, that maybe we said, so that's the thing. So we said that maybe Rav Shimon would say it's muta b'hano, but he would say it requires machshava. But we're saying no, because the chachamim hold it also requires machshava, so it's not normally used as food. So
and Rav Shimon
and the chachamim have to be disagreeing on something, right? So obviously, therefore, going back to the Petra Chamer, we must be talking about he had in mind to use it as food. Nevertheless, Rav Shimon says it doesn't have tumas ochlin because also b'hano. But no, actually, that's what it is. So far, the Gemara is saying that the way Rashi explains is we do seem to be back to Rabba's point. Let's look at the Rashi Afa Gomel, the second half of the Rashi. Okay, Oyster Rav Shimon the Sefer. Since Rav Shimon adds the Gomel etc. in the Sefer, we call the Reisha Rabbani. That implies the first part of that mission is coming to Rabbanon. Or Shmamin a Leslo who is Surei Chishuvay. So they don't hold the Surei Chishuvay. They still hold it requires Machshava. We got it Petra Chamor the Metamin La'el. So when they hold before the Petra Chamor is Metamin Chumas Ochlin, B'dechoshev Aleihu. We have to be talking about he had in mind for it to be food. Because again, according to them, if he didn't think about it, it wouldn't be considered food. V'achilo Hachi Metar Rav Shimon. Even with Machshava, Rav Shimon would say it's tahor. The oichol shiyata yochol lachil lachem, because he would still say that it's also b'hano. The murder of Shimon la'achari for sure also, because Rav Shimon would agree that after it's decapitated, it's also k'derabba. So there we go. We're back to Rabba's point there. So we seem after all to have proved Rabba. So just the opposite. Then I had it backwards. Not that we disproved Rabba's point, but just the opposite. We seem to have proved Rabba's point. We thought maybe that we could explain Rav Shimon and the Chachamim's argument as being based on machshava or not. Now we're saying that's not the basis of it. So the only basis could be they both hold it's also b'hano, but Rav Shimon holds because it's also b'hano, it doesn't have tumas ochlin. And the Chum disagrees and says one has nothing to do with the other.
But it cannot be machshava.
Can't be a matter of machshava. However, Ela Omar Rava. However, Rava says no. We could explain like this. Fine. We've established that both Rav Shimon and the Chachamim will not hold the Isurei Chishuvay. Fine. However, Rava says, still, we don't have to say that Rav Shimon would necessarily hold that after it was decapitated, it's also b'hano. Because if it was decapitated, hachinami, then indeed, the Rabbanon would agree that it doesn't have tumas ochlin. Because we could say, we thought up until this point, yahada machshava for it to be considered food. And then the Chacham would say, that's fine. We don't care whether it's also b'hano. You had in mind somebody is going to eat it. Therefore, it's considered ochlin. It's metamet chumas ochlin. Rav Shimon has the criteria about it being also b'hano. And he said, according to him, it's also b'hano. Therefore, not. Rava says that no. If you decapitated it, then the Chacham would say, you're right. It doesn't matter whether you had machshava. Since you didn't have machshava and you decapitated it, therefore the Chacham would say it doesn't have chumas ochlin. So what is the case? The case, though, might be, suppose that you shechted it, but not for the sake of eating it, because then the fact that you shechted it for the sake of eating would be a machshava, but rather you shechted it for the sake of learning how to shecht. So now that would be the argument between Rav Shimon and the Chachamim. Is that considered a shechita, which is considered a machshava? So the Rabbanon would hold that it doesn't matter what purpose the shechita was done for. Like this, it was done as practice. It would be the same thing as whether you shechted it in order to actually eat it. So therefore, they would hold that it gives it tumas ochlin, like we learned in Cholin about the case we shechted a behemoth smeyer for a goy, because that's what this is, a behemoth smeyer. Reb Shimon would say that no, this isn't considered a full. This isn't considered a real shchita. Therefore, it's not a machshava. Yeah.
He would consider only food.
He would consider only if you're shechting for the sake of food, right? So therefore, in other words, it's nothing to do with the question. He might hold that it is mutar b'hana. He might, after all, hold it's mutar b'hana, but he's arguing it doesn't have tumas ochlin because there wasn't really a proper shchita. Rabbeinu Gershom learns the Chum would say any shchita is shchita, right? And Rabbeinu Gershom learns a little bit differently than Rashi over here. Rabbeinu Gershom learns that Reb Shimon would say that shechting lehislamid is worth even less than arifa or regular shchita. In other words, according to Rashi, it comes out decapitating it without having in mind for it to be food would definitely not make it have tumas ochlin. Shchita for the sake of food, for the sake of a goy eating it, definitely would give it to tumas ochlin. The machlokas is about shchita for practice, which is sort of an in-between thing. Rabbeinu Gershom actually learns that what we're saying is shchita according to Chachamim, according to Reb Shimon rather, shchita for practice is considered even less than arifa. It has even less of a possibility of making it food than at least if it was decapitated, conceivably it could be used for food. But if you're shechting it for practice, where you're not even having in mind that it's for food, then he would say that. Okay.
Even if it's
able to be eaten because it was shechted. That's the point. According to Reb Shimon, maybe you could have anah from it, but nevertheless, it's still, and it wouldn't have too much ochlin, according to Reb Shimon, because you didn't even do something that would be considered a proper way of shechting. Obitlugta the nimus v'Rav Eliezer, Rav Elazar actually. Namely, therefore, this machlokas of Reb Shimon and the Chachamim would be essentially the same as the machlokas between nimus and Rav Elazar. The Tani, as we learn in Brisa, Amar Rav Yosi, Sochli Nimus Ochiv Shor Rav Yeshua Agarsi, Nimus, the brother of Rav Yeshua Agarsi, said to me as follows, Rav Yeshua Agarsi, we know, was a Talmud of Rav Akiva. You have the famous story in Erevin, where when Rav Akiva was in jail, you have the story over there, Rav Yeshua Agarsi, the Tani, yeah. So you have the story in Erevin that when Rav Akiva was jailed by the Romans for a period of time, they allowed one of his Talmidim to come every day and bring him food and water. So every day, Rav Yeshua Agarsi would come with food and water for him, and Rav Akiva would use some of the water to wash his hands, and then the rest of you would drink with his food. So one day, it tells over there how a guard stops Rav Yeshua Agarsi and then starts yelling at him, "You're taking too much water. What are you trying to what are you trying to soften the dirt in the cell so you can dig out, so you can dig your rabbi out or whatever?" So he spills out most of the water and gives him barely enough. Akiva, Rav Akiva says, "I'm not going to eat without washing my hands. Takana de rabbanan, you have to wash before you eat bread. If that means I die of hunger, so be it." Eventually, though, the Romans wanted him alive rather than dead at that point. He was worth more alive for them than dead at that point, so they finally, because they wanted to keep him as a hostage, they wanted whatever the reason is exactly. Anyway, the point is, eventually, they allowed Rabbi Yeshua to bring in more water. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yeshua Agarsi was Rabbi Akiva's attendant in jail. Later on, there's a different place where it says, and Tosfos brings in Bava Metzia, that after Rabbi Akiva passed away, then Yeshua Agarsi and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yeshua Agarsi and Yoah Nabi took him to bury him. Anyway, the point is, so now he had a brother named Nimus, a Greek name, of Pasha. So Rabbi Yossi says, so Nimus, the brother of Yeshua Agarsi, told me the following din, suppose a person shechs a raven in order to practice shechita with it, same idea. So Nimus says that its blood is able to be machshir other food lekabel truma. Meaning, in other words, if you shechted it for a full-fledged shchita where you intended to give the meat to a goy, then obviously, definitely, then the blood is machshu even itself. Because that's, again, the shchita is a machshav. But and on the other hand, Rashi says if you stabbed it or killed it in some other way, then the blood is certainly not machshu the kabbal truma. In this case, where you shechted it in this in-between way, because you shechted it in order to practice, Nimus says that fine, the raven itself is not muchshu the kabbal truma, because you didn't shecht it intending for it to be food. And people don't normally eat ravens, but the blood of it is able to be machshir. No, of course not. But the same way as you said before about shechting a donkey, because in other words, the very fact that you shechted it, according to Nimus, and even though it was a shechita only for practice, is enough to make that the blood of it is able to be machshir the kabbal tumah. Okay, so that's Nimus. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lazar, actually, it says, Shitchel Kabessa says, Rabbi Lazar, I'm a dam shchita la'olam machshir. And on the other hand, Rabbi Lazar says that blood of shchita is always machshir. So first of all, we have to figure out what's the difference. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Lazar, Haina Tanakama, isn't Rabbi Lazar saying the same thing as Nimus, that blood of shchita is machshir? It must be that they're arguing about this point of Isurei Chishuvah. That we have, that they're arguing on this point about this point of when you're shechting it like this, for when you're shechting it for practice. Tanakama sava dome machshel alma. The Tanakama nimus therefore would hold the blood of this raven is able to be machshel other food to be makabel toma. Avol legufei boy machshava. But as far as the meat of the raven itself, it's not yet machshel makabel toma unless you had in mind to eat it, because otherwise it's suris shuvay. But also, Rabbi Eliezer, the name, Dam Shchita Lo'olam Machshir, V'Afilu L'Gufei Nami Lo'Boi Machshava. And Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lazar, comes to say that no, blood of Shchita is always Machshir, meaning that it's Machshir, the raven itself, even whatever Machshava you had, it doesn't require Machshava. So therefore, we would say that Reb Shimon and the Chachamim therefore have a similar machlokes. Now we said Rava is saying that they're not arguing on the point of Isurei Chishuvah. Right? They both hold that not. That's why we said before it requires machshava. But therefore we're talking about this case where you shechted the slamed by. So therefore Reb Shimon would hold the blood of it. Therefore Reb Shimon would hold that just like Rabbi Lazar holds in this case about the raven. Just like Nimus holds that the blood is machshir other things, but not the raven itself. So you didn't have machshava for the raven, and Rabbi Lazar disagrees with that and says the raven is also machshir. The same way, Rabbi Shimon would say that the donkey when it's shechted to practice is not considered a machshava. Therefore it's not considered food. And the Chachamim would say it doesn't matter. The Chachamim would say, like Rabbi Lazar, that it doesn't matter what intention you had. You shechted it, and therefore it's considered food. Okay.
So we're coming back.
So if we explain it that way, then it's not a matter. Usually, the Chachamim and Rav Shimon would both agree you don't require machshava. That you do require machshava. Just because something is also doesn't automatically make it food. But in this case, where you shechted it to practice, that would be the machlokas.
Like in our previous
case. Like in this case of Nimus and Rabbi Lazar. Again, Rabbi Gershom has a bit of a different understanding of the sugya. He understands Isurei Chishuvah in a way more similar to the way we were using it before. That the question is whether the very fact that it's also automatically counts as machshava or not. Anyway, but we're going back to this concept of Isurei Chishuvah that Nimus and Rabbi Lazar are arguing on that point. Anyway, the point is that if we understand it that way, again, then what it would mean is that Reb Shimon is not necessarily saying that the Petra Hamor that was decapitated is also Bana. He might say, maybe he says it's also Bana, maybe he says it's Mutar Bana. The argument he's having about Tumas Oichlan, if it has nothing to do with whether it's also Bana or not, it has to do with, like this, you shechted it, instead of decapitating it, you shechted it in order to practice. Is that considered a shechita or not? If it's considered a shechita, then it is considered oichol. If it's not considered a shechita, then it's not considered oichol. Because again, donkeys are not normally eaten.
It's not considered oichol.
Then it's not considered oichol. So that would explain why he says it's not tumas oichol. Nothing to do with whether it's mutabana or not. The question is, Mimai, who says that's the correct explanation of the machloikas between Nimus and Rabbi Lazar? Dilma taima de Rabbi Lazar hasam. Maybe the reason why Rabbi Lazar says, in that case, why he says that the raven itself is mokshel l'kabel tumah, the shiny odor of hoyo v'yesh bei simonei tara. Because a raven is different. It has some of the simonei tara of a bird. We learned in Chulin, when we learned the whole sugya about kosher and non-kosher species of birds, we said there are four simonei tara among the birds, which the Chachamim have the Kabbalah, and they learned them by comparing the Nesher and Turin. And we said that we said in the sugya over there, we said there that there's a couple of the non-kosher birds that have one simon tumah. The raven has two and two. Most of them have three simonitara, and then you have all and you have some no non kosher birds.
We
We said you have esfiyaseirah, either an extra toe sticking out from the back of the leg, or a longer middle toe. It has a zefek, a crop pouch inside the neck. Kukavon and niflas, the gizzard can be peeled, and it's not dervis. It doesn't kill its prey, or it doesn't hold it down when it eats, or whatever. Different explanations of dervis exactly. So we said that a raven has two simone tara. So therefore, maybe I don't remember if we said there which ones it has, but we said that a raven has two simone tara, which, by the way, Tosfos discusses over there, that the usual translation of Orev is a crow, but Rebbe Natan writes over there, they checked a crow and didn't find that it had two of these simone tara. So maybe it's some other creature. Maybe it's a raven, maybe it's some other related species, whatever. Anyway. Okay, anyway. The point is, so maybe Rabbi Lazar is saying, because an Orev has two simone tara, therefore it has the rule that therefore it's able to be mukshal kabel terumah without any further machshava, and even therefore shechting it for practice is enough to be considered food. Well, we know the simone tara milsi, and where would we get the idea that whether a bird has simone tara or not matters? After all, it's not a kosher bird. Because we just said on Amar Aleph that Omer Reb Shimon Matam Hayover Yeshbei Simone Tara. Because the same way as Reb Shimon had said that the Gomel and Shofon and so forth have the same, their nevela of them has the same din as the nevela of a behemoth Tahora, for the same reason, because it has one Simon Tara. The same thing over here. Rabbi Lazar might be taking the same view. It has two Simone Tara, two out of the four. Therefore, shchita for practice on it is considered shchita. But maybe he wouldn't say the same thing, let's say, with a nesher, which has zero simone tara, as the Gemara says over there. Maybe he would hold with that, yeah. Okay. That's Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Lazar. So you're going to answer back, okay, well, if it was a matter of whether the bird has simone tara or not, or simone toma, my iriel is lamed, then who cares whether he's, why bother mentioning the case where he's shechting the practice? I feel at least asik nami. You could even have maybe a better case where he didn't even intend to shecht at all. He was just, he was cutting something else and accidentally shechted the bird. If you're going to say the key thing is whether it has the simone tara or not, the same way as an Omer Aleph, Reb Shimon doesn't distinguish with the gomel or the shofron or whatever, whether you shechted them for practice or whether you shechted them regular or whether they got killed in a car accident or what have you. Either way, he says the nevela of it does have tumas harchon automatically. The same way Reb Elazar, if he's taking the same view over here, should say it doesn't matter how this odor was shechted, as long as, even if it was just shechted completely accidentally. The answer is Eino Chanami. You're right. The bride, according to Rabbi Lazar, that would be true. According to Rabbi Lazar, we could say even if you accidentally shechted the raven, it would still be Mokshal Kabal Toma or Mishum Nimus. But you could say, on the other hand, Nimus is the one who holds that the blood of it is not Maksha, the raven itself, only other things. According to him, there has to at least be some sort of shechita. So therefore, the point is, he would say, even if it was Shechter, it's Slamed by, which is at least he's intending to shecht, unlike Masasik, where he didn't even intend to shecht. Nevertheless, the raven does not have Tumas Erchlin. So maybe that's why we have to mention the case of Leis Slamed. Because if we only mention the case of Leis Asik, we wouldn't know how far Nimus goes in being makel about this raven.
It's only in the case of Leis Slamed.
No, because he would say, if it mentioned the case of Leis Asik, then fine, that would work well according to Rebbe Lazar, because Rebbe Lazar doesn't care how you shechted, whether it was accidentally or on purpose. But Nimus would say, but we wouldn't know that Nimus would say, if you shechted, we would say, then fine, Nimus would say, if you shechted Leis Asik, that you didn't even intend to shecht, sure, it's not Metame the bird, because the bird doesn't have too much oisklin, why should it, or there was nothing to be machshir it. But if you shechted Leis Lamed to practice Shchita, you wouldn't know what Nimus holds. We want to be told how far Nimus goes, that even when it was shechting Leis Lamed, he still says the raven is not Mokshal Kabal Toma. That's why we mentioned...
When it's Yisasek or it's Leis Lamed?
Yes. Then it's not Mokshal the bird. Only if he was shechting, fully intending to shecht in order to feed it to a goyah. Yeah. So far then, Rava's explanation, again, doesn't require Reb Shimon to be saying that the Petach Hamor is also Bana. We could say, according to Reb Shimon, the Petach Hamor is Mutar Bana. He and the Chachamim are arguing about the case where you shechted it for practice. But on the other hand, that now we're saying, though, on the other hand, maybe Reb Shimon and the Chachamim are not arguing the same machlokas as Reb Elazar and Nimus, because maybe they're only arguing about an Orev, which after all has two out of four Simone Tara. maybe that machlokas wouldn't apply to a donkey. So we don't know for sure.
A donkey has how many?
A donkey has zero simani tuma. Zero simani tuma. And it doesn't chew its cud, doesn't have split hooves. Okay. Okay, so he asks a contradiction on him. Who's the he? Rashi says Abaya is asking Rava, or Rabba, actually, should the Mukabat exchange with you. Rabba, who began this whole sugya by saying that Rav Shimon would say that the Petra Chamor, after it's decapitated, is also Bana, and we've been going back and forth on that whole point this whole time. So now Abaya says, I have a contradiction to you. You're telling me on that point that Rav Shimon says it's also Bana. So the Abraiser says, "Loi rotzalus doisai." If the person doesn't want to redeem the petach hamor, ofer b'kofet me'acholav, he has to decapitate it with a cleaver from the back of the head. Meaning, you know, unlike shchitza, which takes place from the front of the neck, here you go from the back, cutting downward through the spine, through the spinal cord, and everything. Yeah, like the egg arufa. The kovro, and then you have to bury it. But also b'hana, and also b'hana, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon matir. But Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. So on the face, so therefore you see it's not also b'hana. The answer is okay. Ema umechayim also b'hana, Rabbi Shimon matir. No, maybe what the b'raisa means is before you shecht it, before you had to decapitate it, part of it is a braisa, part of it is a mishnah. The last mishnah of our perek mentions this concept of decapitating it from the back. The machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon is in a braisa. Anyway, the point is that we should change the wording of the braisa. What the braisa means is umechayim also b'hanav, but Rav Shimon after. What about before you decapitated it, while the animal is alive? It would be also b'hanav, because we said before that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds, and Rabbi Shimon would say it's mutter b'hanav. So not necessarily is the b'raisa addressing the question of what happens after it's decapitated. Maybe Rabbi Shimon would hold. Maybe Rabbi Shimon would hold it's also b'hanav, maybe not. So the question is, Muhammad is safer mechayim habi, reishalav mechayim. What do you mean, though? The end of the b'raisa is talking about what happens when the animal is alive. So necessarily, therefore, the first part of the b'raisa has to be talking about earlier, after you decapitated it. In other words, the b'raisa would first be talking about the fact that you have to decapitate it, and that's also b'hanav. Yeah. Then it would be going back and saying what happens while it's alive. The katani is safer because the b'raisa continues. How do you kill it? Lo yumisenu lo b'kona. You're not allowed to kill it using a sharpened reed. V'lo b'magol, or with a sickle. V'lo b'kaudrum, or with an axe. V'lo b'magero, or with a saw. V'lo yachnisenu l'cheder v'yino delos b'fana b'shirosh yamos. You can't put it in a room and lock the door so it should die. When the pasuk says va'arasto, then you actually have to decapitate it with a cleaver, like we said,
from the back.
And the braisa continues, but also begiz of avoda, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon matir. And the braisa continues, this animal, while it's alive, it's also to shear, it's also to work with, meaning that's also bana, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon matir. Now, obviously, that part is talking about while it's alive. So in other words, obviously that part is talking about while the animal is alive, because it's not relevant to talk about Gizan Avoda once it's dead. So therefore, of necessity, the first part of the Braisa, when we're talking about Osabahanav Rav Shimon Matir, must be talking about a different Achlokas, what happens after it's killed. And we see Rav Shimon is still Matir. So what are you telling me Rav Shimon would agree that it's Osir? The answer is no, not necessarily, because you could still say Reisha V'Seifa Mechayim, you could still say both parts of the Braisa are talking about when the animal is alive. What it is Reisha b'hanah domav seifa b'hanah gufay. You could say the braisa is talking about two different kinds of hanah that you could potentially have from the animal while it's alive. One is hanah domav, the hanah of the value of it. Namely, let's say you rented it out to other people, Rashi says. So we would say that Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's also b'hanah, meaning the money that you rented it for is also. Rabbi Shimon would say it's mutter. And the sefer is talking about hanah from the animal itself, like shearing the hair off it, or like working with it yourself. But they're different kinds of hanah.
Okay.
And in fact, actually, Rashi makes a point of mentioning over here that we're talking about that you rented it, implying, in other words, Rashi is not apparently talking about the case where you sold it to somebody else. Now, the Rambam holds that if you sell it to somebody else, it's actually the money is also hanah. Because the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, even though we've been discussing Rabbi Shimon's opinion all this time, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that it's also b'hanah while before you redeemed it. It is also Osabano after you kill it. That we've been discussing. But the halacha is like a behoda as far as mechayin, that's Osabano. Therefore, the Rambam learns that even if he stole it, the value of it would be Osabano, which leads the Raiva to ask, what are you talking about? You only have a few things in Torah where if you sell them, the money of them is Osir. Shemitah fruit is one of them. We learned yesterday. Avodah Zarah is another one. But not, where do we find Petah Hamor? Okay, the noise the Kalim and the Rambam say, but that's why Rashi makes a point of mentioning over here, doctor, if you rented it. Because if you rented it, then there's no question, then Rabbi Yehuda would say the money that you rented it, the money that you got for the rental of it would be Osir, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So maybe selling it would be Mutter, like the Raivet is arguing, maybe not. Actually, the Rosh points out an interesting thing, which the Rambam brings as halacha in Shulchan Aruch. If you sell the Petah Hamor to somebody minus the value of the Seh, then it's allowed. Namely, you have, again, the chamor is worth $100, let's say. The seh is worth $10. So you can sell it to somebody for $90. So fine, he's going to have to take $10 and take a seh and then give it to the kohen. Fine, so that you would be allowed to do. But anyway, the price that we're talking about, again, having hanor from the value of it versus from the animal itself. And why would we need to be told both? So not necessarily is the Braisa addressing what happens after it's decapitated. Maybe Rav Shimon holds that it actually holds. It's also hanor. Okay, why would we need to be told both cases? Utsricha. We would need both of them. The Itana Hanoach Dhamma, because if Braisa had mentioned only only the case about having Hanoach from the value of it, you would say, Bahu Kashori Rav Shimon, you would argue, okay, because there you're not having Hanoach from the actual animal itself, only the value. Maybe that's why Rav Shimon allows it. Aval Bahanoach Gufoi, but when it comes to having Hanoach from the goof of the animal, Ema Modulay Rav Yehuda, maybe he would agree with Rav Yehuda that it's also. And on the other hand, if you only talk about Hanoach and the body of it, shearing it or working with it, you would say, he calls the Rabbi Yehuda, maybe only there Rabbi Yehuda is answering. But when it comes to having Hanoach and the value of it, by renting it out, let's say, maybe he would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it's also. So therefore, Tzricha, therefore we need both Machlokes.
So here we make a distinction between Gufa
and Doma. But not necessarily. Are we talking about what happens after it's decapitated? Maybe then Rabbi Shimon would agree it's also Hanoach. So we haven't concluded yet, but let's continue. V'chein Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Babur. So far, we had Rabba's opinion that Rav Shimon would have told that it's also Bana after it's decapitated. So Rav Nachman says the same thing in the name of Rabba Babur. Moed Rav Shimon La'acha Arifa Shul Osir. That he holds after it's decapitated, it's also. But Amar Rav Nachman Minah Aminava. And Rav Nachman says, where do I get that from? The Tanya, because the Braita says, when the Pasuk says Va'al Rabdoi, like we said before, we have a Zera Shabbat. Nema kan arifa, but nema lahalan arifa. Here it says to decapitate it. The egla arufa, it also says to decapitate. Ma lahalan also, afkan also. Just like over there, it's also. Here also, it's also. So we have to ask Mani, which kana would this be like? Ilemer of Yehuda. Would you say that this bride says according to Rabbi Yehuda? How could it be according to Rabbi Yehuda? Mechayim makes it also. He says the animal's already also, bahana while it's alive. So he wouldn't need a Zera Shabbat to tell us that it's also after it's decapitated. El Olav Rav Shimon. He apparently it must be a coincidence of Rav Shimon. So that's a proof that Rav Shimon would say that it's also Bana after it's decapitated. However, Omalei Rav Sheshet says to Rav Nachman, Safra Chavra, your colleague Safra, namely the famous Rav Safra in the Gemara, Talguma, he explained the Braita differently. No, La Olam Rav Yehuda. You could after all say the Braita is like Rav Yehuda, the Istrich, but he would say you still need the Gzer Shabbat to tell us that it's also after it's decapitated. Because otherwise you would think, look, the Torah tells you have to redeem it. The Torah tells us if you don't redeem it, you have to decapitate it. You would think the decapitation stands in place of the redeeming. What happens after you redeem the Petah Hamor? It's Mutabana. So you would think the same way. The Arifa also makes it Mutabana. Kamash Malan, and that is why we need Zeta Shabbat to tell us that not.
That the
Arifa is not Matur, that it still remains off the Rafa.
The Gzer Shava is which one?
The Gzer Shava, Var Afto, with Egla Arufa. So therefore...
It's like being low, but it's not...
Yeah, it's also Bahana, after it's decapitated, so is it.
So is
the Petah Hamor. The point is, not necessarily is this Braisa of Kwanzer of Shimon. So therefore, we don't necessarily know that's a Shimon opinion. Okay, however, Omer of Nachman... We should say it, right? That's the thing. Rav Safra explains it could be a Kwanzer of Yehuda. You would say Rabbi Yehuda says it's also while it's alive. Why do we need another one to tell us after it's dead? Because otherwise you would think the Arifa is master, it's like opinion is master.
After death.
Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Minam Minalah, but Rav Nachman continues, where do I get my opinion from of how Rav Shimon holds? Midatoni Levi, because Levi taught a braisa, why does he have to decapitate the animal? Who hifted Mamonish or Koyan? He caused the Koyan to lose his money because he didn't want to give the sheep to the Koyan in exchange for it. Lefichach Yufsa Mamona, therefore his money gets destroyed. Which means, Rashi says, we're not necessarily just talking about the fact that Daraisa, he has to decapitate it. That's it. It's a mitzvah and the Torah, fine. Mitzvahs and the Torah don't necessarily need reasons. The question is, later on in our parak, we're going to say that Basin gives him 30 days to be poged. And if not, then they force him to decapitate it. So the question is, why are we giving him only a 30-day deadline? Because if he wants to deprive the Kohen of his money, then he deserves to be deprived of his chamor. So therefore,
he wants
the Kohen of his money because he's not giving him the set. He's not doing Pidyon Petach Hamor, so therefore he ends up losing his. So, money. So again, we have to ask, says Rav Nachman, which Tana would this be like? Elaimer of Yehuda, are you going to say according to Rav Yehuda? He's not losing anything. Hamifsid Bekoi. He's already lost this animal because it was never Motzah B'Hanah. So therefore, what do you mean? Yufsid Mamone, therefore he loses his money, implying that up until now he had something that he could use, and now he's losing it. He never was able to use the Petach Hamor all this time, according to Rav Yehuda.
Because
it was also B'Hanah while it was alive. El Olav Rav Shimon. He apparently, it must be according to Rav Shimon. So therefore, Rav Nachman says that it's mutter while it's alive. It's mutter before you were poyed it. So now you refuse to be poyed it. Now you're losing something that before you had the use of this animal. Now, after 30 days, Basin is forcing you to decapitate it because you didn't redeem it. Okay. However, the Gemara says, not necessarily, No, because you could say this bryce that goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. You could also say it goes according to Rabbi Shimon. You could say that it goes according to Rabbi Yehuda because absolutely baini. Because the point is, what he's losing out is the difference in value. Again, like this, he could have been poder with a $10 set, and he would have gained, now he has 90, now he's $90 to the good, because he has $100 worth chamor, and only have to pay with $10 to be poder. As opposed to now he loses the whole thing, if he doesn't want to do it. So even according to Yehuda, you could say, Yufsad Mamonai, that he had potential money over here, he had a potential value over here, that he could have had, and now he lost it. So the braisa could work according to Yehuda. The braisa say, Rav Shimon, the pchas misa. Or you could say, according to Rav Shimon, because you could say, and what you could say, Rav Shimon would be saying maybe that it is that it is mutter b'hanah. But the difference is, like this, when it was alive, it was worth, let's say, $100. Now, after it's dead, it's only worth $1 because all you can use it for is dog food. So he's still losing out. So not necessarily is this braisa taking a position on whether it's also b'hanah after it's dead. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Because in both cases,
you could still say he's losing something. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So we'll continue tomorrow, Rav Hashem.
No conclusion.
Well, so far, no conclusion. I mean, in the end, the halacha is like, in general, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Shimon. So therefore, it is also while it's alive. And throughout the sugya, we've been saying that Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's also after it's dead. He has no reason to say it's the only logical reason we thought that it could be mutter after a dead according to Yehuda is because maybe you would think that Arifa takes the place of Pidyon, and we said that, and we shlugged that up, and we said that not. So therefore, the bottom line is, it's also B'Hanah while it's alive, and it's also B'Hanah after it's dead.
And why does it take the place of Pidyon?
Because it doesn't, because the fact is, the Torah is telling you, if you poed it, then it's Mutzah B'Hanah, but if you're not, then you have to decapitate it, and then you lose the value of it.
And that shows that it's not
So you're actually losing the value of it, yeah, it shows that. So, according to the Rambam, that means you're not even allowed to sell it. And if you do, the money is also about no. According to everybody else, you would be able to sell it. You just wouldn't be able to rent it. And according to the Rosh, if you want to sell it minus the value of the set, then you could do that even machatzilah. You inform him that it's a bechor. You tell him, I'm deducting from the price the value of an average set because I know you're going to have to deposit it. And that, the Rosh says, would be mutter even machatzilah.
And the Rambam says you could not?
The Rambam doesn't make a distinction. Some of the notes that came on the Rambam want to say that maybe he would agree with that distinction also, but most of them say that not. The Rambam is not making any such distinction. Apparently, according to him, across the board, it's also to sell it.